welcome to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have E.E. Holmes. She is the author of the Gateway Trilogy and also the Gateway Tracker series. E.E. Holmes is also the author of the Rift Magic Saga Trilogy. We're going to get into those books and a whole lot more right after these brief messages.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
I'm excited today to have E.E. Holmes on. She's a author of the Gateway Trilogy and also the Gateway Tracker series. And it's absolutely phenomenal book series. I was turned on by my sister on the Gateway Trilogy, and she's reading it. My wife's reading it. I'm reading it. We've purchased all the books. We're going to get into that and a few other things. And welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Before we get into the books, what led you into becoming a writer?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have been my entire life one of those people who is very devoted to books, to reading, to writing came naturally out of that, I think, for me. I started as one of those little kids who my mom had to force me to go outside and play, but I'd have the book, you know, with me tucked under my arm. And I was always getting lost in stories. And I think the way I started writing was from this need to create my own stories that were similar to the stories that I loved. I mean, if you think about it, it's sort of like the kid version of like fan fiction. You know, I would start to write a story, but it always turned out suspiciously similar in plot to whatever I was obsessed with at the time, whether it was Roald Dahl or the Anne of Green Gables books. For a while, I was reading until they fell apart. And so over time, I just came to associate writing and creating stories with reading them. And I think that's where that love came from. So I've been writing since I can remember. You know, my dad used to bring these legal pads home from work, and I used to steal them from him, and I'd rip the cardboard backings off of them. And then I'd draw my line down the middle of the page so I could put my picture on the top and the words on the bottom. And oh my gosh, I must've filled like 100 of those things. So it's just always been a part of who I was. And, you know, even all through high school and college. And then afterwards, I was always working on something. You know, I didn't always finish them, but there was always a creative writing project going on.
I noticed like in the Gateway books, there's a heavy paranormal. So did you have any paranormal experience, you know, growing up? Or was it just a subject that you thought would be interesting for a certain group of readers?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. It's almost a little bit of both. I didn't have any paranormal experiences when I was young, but when I started teaching, you know, I was teaching high school English, and it was difficult to get my students into the books that we were reading. Because of course I was teaching them off of the curriculum. There's a lot of classics on there. I'm trying to get, you know, 16-year-old kids interested in like Macbeth and 1984 and Lord of the Flies. And it's not that those aren't great books. It's just that they're written in a style and in a time that kids don't relate to as much. But I knew I had kids in my classes who did like to read. So I just started asking them, what do you like to read? What books are you reading? And once I was asking them that question, they were all coming in and handing me books. My, you know, Miss, you have to read this. You have to read this one. This series is great. So I just started reading, you know, in my spare time, the kinds of books my students were reading, thinking to myself, there's got to be a way to incorporate this into the curriculum in a way that they feel like they can be connected to the stories that they find interesting, but they can also be learning about the craft of writing and you know, reading you know, reading in the sense of really trying to understand theme and things like that. And what was really popular at the time, this is right around like 2012 or so, the Twilight books were like the really big thing, you know, like paranormal, YA paranormal fiction was having a serious moment at the time. Mm-hmm. Everything was vampires, everything was werewolves and shapeshifters and all this kind of stuff. And so, I mean, I read all those books, everything they handed me, I read, you know, and it was enjoyable. I mean, like, you can understand why kids would be into that, you know, the idea of inserting magic or danger or mythology, like into your everyday life, you know, and how exciting that idea is, you know, that you could walk into school and you could meet a new friend and they could turn out to be a, you know, whatever, a vampire, a werewolf, a this or that. And so, but one of the things I noticed in paranormal fiction that seemed to really be missing were ghosts. There were not a lot of books about ghosts, lots of other paranormal stuff, but not really that type of paranormal stuff. And at the time, there was a TV show that was very popular, which I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with, called Ghost Hunters. There were a bunch of shows that were popping up like that. And I had really gotten into watching them. I'm one of those people, I consider myself very open-minded to all of the unexplained. I'm certainly not going to pretend that I know enough about the world and how it works to decide, you know, what's real and what's not. And so I've always been very open-minded about all that stuff. And I started watching these ghost hunting shows, and I was just fascinated with the methods that were being used and the science that was being introduced and used in new ways. And I was always fascinated, of course, at the end when it came down to listening to the evidence and trying to see if they caught anything. And you know, sometimes you're like, oh yeah, okay. Like, that's not there. I don't hear anything there that's all that impressive. But every once in a while, they would catch something that would really leave you shaking your head. And I thought to myself, what would you do if you were a person who 100% with all of your being did not believe in the paranormal at all? And then one day you just started having paranormal experiences that were absolutely undeniable. What would that be like? What would your life be like? And so sort of combining that with the idea of writing for a young audience was how I came up with the concept for the Gateway books in the first place.
Talk to some authors, they need to go somewhere to write, you know, for seclusion, getting away from the family or their job or the city, depending on what you're writing about. Do you do that or can you write anywhere?
I'm sort of forced to write anywhere at this point. I've got a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, and it's a little tricky to isolate myself in that way. You know, I have a dream of a writer's shed. We've got 2.5 acres, you know, with woods and whatnot out back behind in our property. And the dream is to build myself a little writer's shed out there, where I can kind of go and shut the door and just be in that space, you know, fill it with books, all of my sort of inspirational stuff that I like to have around me. That dream is still probably a couple years away from happening. But in the meantime, I have a writing area in my room where I can kind of tuck myself away. I have to have like music playing, you know, I like to have the door closed. Like, I'm definitely not a person who writes as well when there's a lot going on. But that said, I did write my first few Gateway books while I was raising my own kids. They were, you know, babies at the time, and also doing daycare for other people's kids, you know, and I'd squeeze in a few hundred words during nap time and then, you know, get my kids to bed at night. And then I was, you know, nodding off over my computer, you know, trying to get in what writing I could for, during the day. So I do have to say, now that they're in school full time, it's definitely a lot easier.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, you're trying to take on the family life, you know, and also a career. But as a child, when you were growing up, you know, you always get asked that question, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, that's so funny. So when I was young, I would say, yes, I would have told you that I wanted to be a writer. As I got a little bit older, I discovered a love of theater. And I thought for a while that perhaps doing theater, teaching theater, you know, being an actor. I wrote quite a few one-act plays in college and then for my students when I was teaching afterwards. And I loved teaching. It's an absolutely enormous, monstrous amount of work. And it's definitely a labor of love, but I loved it. But it was funny, even as I was thinking about doing theater, teaching, it was always wrapped up in writing. Yeah, I was always writing things for my students. I was, you know, working on creative writing projects for my students. And I was always had something going on in the background, the idea for a story, the idea for a book. And so it wasn't my intention, I think, when I graduated from college to become a full-time writer, but it was my ambition to complete a whole manuscript, to finish an entire book. And at first, that was just the goal. Like, I just want to write it and finish it and say that I finished it. And then I met a friend who's a Massachusetts Book Award winner. His name's Norm Gautreau. He was local to my town. And he was a very successful writer who I was able to meet and be friends with. I actually had Zoom cocktails with him last night. He's in Arizona now, but he really inspired me to kind of take that manuscript and turn it into something real. And then my husband, especially, he was the one who really pushed me to, you know, a lot of writers and performers, actors, you know, creative types it can be very hard for us to promote ourselves. We want to make the creations, but then we kind of want to hide under a rock and not really. It's like, I'll put it out in the world, but then I don't ever want to hear about it again, you know? And he is a brilliant marketer and he's a details guy. And he was the one who really said, no, like, you know, these books are good and we should be doing something with them. And I think this could be your career if you wanted it to be. And now it is. Now it's both of our careers. He does all of my marketing. I do all of the writing and that's our family business. That's what we do.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you remind me a lot of it. My sister-in-law was the English teacher in high school. Matter of fact, she's the one editing my book right now. And my teacher in high school, Mr. Banks, I signed up for speech class, speech one and speech two, and ended up joining the debate team. And he got me out of my shell being shy and performing in front of people. He kind of bribed all of us to join the school play.
You really do have to bribe kids sometimes.
You remind me of him. I don't know why you taught, you know, theater. You took mm-hmm. theater in college, Holy Cross.
Yes.
I thought that was great, you know, that your way of going to writing was probably seen like myself. I wasn't really into reading. I mean, it was because it was just kind of boring. It wasn't until I came across a couple books, you know, and I think it's the author. It just kind of struck me like Stephen King, James Patterson. These authors just kind of like, you know, I can get into it, you know. And when I started reading your book, so it was like, man, I put you up there with that. I mean, because we can relate, you know, like my sister says, you know, she can cry, laugh, and jump up and down in one chapter of The Trackers.
I love that.
But I think our favorite character out of all the books, every single one of us, my wife, myself, my sister, my sister-in-law, is Milo.
Oh yeah. Milo's the perennial favorite. Milo is, you know, that Milo's actually a funny story. So for readers who haven't, listeners who haven't read, Milo is a ghost in the series. And he was actually quite the happy accident. I did not have his character planned or plotted into the further books beyond book one. Milo started very much as a device of necessity. You know, Jess is in this place. She needs to find Hannah. She therefore needs somebody to tell her where to go. And so I just created this little bit character part. And it was like, this is going to sound so corny, but if you write and you fall in love with characters in books the way that I do, it makes sense. He literally took on a life of his own. Like, he insisted upon himself. Like, I wrote that first scene and I was like, oh, you're coming along for the ride, aren't you? I can already tell. Like, I you know, I fell in love with him. And then I couldn't not take him along for the ride. You know, I started to think to myself, you know, this might actually be cool if there's a ghost in the mix all the time, kind of as part of the central group of characters. Like, this could be really, could add a whole new level of depth to the story, there's so much more I could do with it if I have a character that's already kind of in that state. And so Milo came along for the ride and we never looked back.
Yeah, that's my next question. Like, how do you come up with these? I mean, it's like these characters. I mean, are they based off of somebody? This is a series that you have to get. I mean, I'm serious. It's really well worth the money, well worth the read. And it's the characters that, you know, I find out, I don't want to spoil anything on the books, but, you know, it's a wow factor.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much. That's with my theater background, I actually found that character creation. It's definitely something that my readers have expressed that they feel is like a strength of the series. I like to think it's a strength of the series, but that's really up to the people who read it, like not me who wrote it. But I can tell you that I found my theater background to be extremely helpful in creating what I hope are believable and lovable characters that you can really connect with. You know, as a part of training as an actor, you really learn about character building. And how important it is to have such a deep understanding of your character, you know, going so far as to research well beyond what actually happens in the script so that you know them so well, you can hear their voice and you can predict how they would react to situations, even if the script doesn't lay that situation out for you, you know? And so I would use a lot of those character building exercises that I learned in, you know, in theater classes in order to build up these characters. So, you know, in my various documents on my computer, you know, I've got, you know, journal entries written from different characters' point of views and grocery shopping lists and text conversations and like all these things. And they're like, they're never going to make it into any of the books. But sometimes if you get stuck with what you're working on in the moment, if you're trying to figure out what that next, how you're going to handle this next plot transition or how you're going to get from this scene to that scene and you're drawing a blank, I would just go back to the character work and I would kind of dive back into silly little character building exercises until it came to me. You know, it's like the better you get to know the characters, the better you're going to be able to figure out how they're going to get from point A to point B. And it's weird to say, but sometimes it feels like from doing those activities, they were actually telling me what to do next. You know what I mean? Like I was like building them in such a way that they could hopefully help me out just by imagining them in certain situations would help me get from point A to point B.
You ever find out in the middle of the night, you wake up and something just came to you, like a character or a scene?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I keep a notebook by my bed and sometimes I wake up and I jot things down. Although it's funny because sometimes I'll get up in the morning, I'll look at it and I'll be like, what in the hell? What does that mean? Like I somewhere in the night, I've like lost the train of thought that makes the notes make sense. But sometimes I'll wake up and it's like, it's right there. Like and I've had a few moments like that recently too, because I'm planning. I took a break from the Gateway books and I have been working on another trilogy called the Rift Magic Saga, which is a little more like gaslight fantasy, like, you know, alternate Victorian magical kind of, I call it like Harry Potter meets Downton Abbey sort of thing. And I've been working on those, but I was getting a lot of feedback from readers who were just like, you know, can we please have more stories, you know, in the Gateway series? Like, you know, Rift Magic is great. When are you going to do any more books? I'm like, okay, I can take a hint. So I'm actually working on the third Rift Magic book now. And then the next book I work on will be a new Gateway Trackers book. And so I've been researching some locations over in Ireland. I'm trying to convince my husband we need to take a research trip, you know? Yeah. I'm like, I can't start working on this book until I get over there and investigate some ruins of castles on islands. And yeah, you know, I mean, you know, my husband and I will intentionally stay places or visit places that are meant to be haunted just to, I don't know, stay in that space and have that experience. You know, I think it's important to have as much real life experience.
You can smell and the feel of the castle or whatever building you're trying to write about.
Oh yeah.
Before I go any further, let's maybe backtrack a little bit on let my listeners know what the Gateway series is all about. That goes from the Gateway trilogy into the Gateway Trackers.
Yes. Yeah. So the original trilogy was all I had planned at first. And it's the story of Jess Ballard, And she's a teenager who's had a really rough life. Her mother is a not at all functioning alcoholic with some really deeply buried family secrets that she has never done well in coping with. And Jess has kind of almost been a parent to her own mother her whole life. And her mother dies under what Jess considers to be mysterious circumstances. And then all of a sudden, Jess finds herself, just as she's trying to settle into college, finds herself suddenly having these ghostly sightings. I mean, she's seeing ghosts. She's being visited by them. She doesn't believe in ghosts. So that's complication number one. And of course, complication number two is once she comes to terms with it, trying to figure out why she's suddenly being haunted. She has a feeling it's connected to the fact, you know, her mother has died. This has never happened to her before, but now suddenly it's happening all the time. She moves in with her aunt and uncle, and the aunt is her mother's twin. And it's clear there's like a whole history buried there that she doesn't know anything about. And so really the series is just about, for her, unraveling the secret, this family secret behind why she's suddenly seeing ghosts. She has no choice but to embrace it because it's not going away. And really the trilogy and then the subsequent Trackers books just follow the adventures that she's taken on, sometimes willingly, sometimes unwillingly, in the service of this legacy that she has, this gift that she has, which is sometimes more curse than it is blessing. And there's a very deep and sort of fully realized subculture of people who can see ghosts that's embedded into this series. It has its roots in like Celtic mythology, you know, Celtic ideas, you know, Irish Celtic, kind of the whole UK area. And it's a lot of the books are set in England. The first one is set in the US, and so is the first Trackers book for the most part. But otherwise, they mostly take place in the UK, which is where I wish I lived. And I've always been a huge Anglophile, so that's not surprising. That's where my whole family history stems from. And so it feels like dipping back into my own timeline a little bit, you know, when I do research about those areas. And yeah, they're, and I think they're, the books are character focused. They focus a lot on the relationships between the characters, building them, deepening them. I like to think that by the time people have finished the series, that they feel like they've gone on a journey with like a new group of friends. I hope they'll be sad to say goodbye to them, you know, when the books are done. But, you know, hey, that's what rereading is for, right?
We have a card night like every Friday night with my family.
Yeah.
Between my sister, my wife, myself, we sit there where we just butcher some of these names in the book. You know, it's kind of comical in a way. My sister, like, so we want you to clarify some of these, the pronunciation, some of these names, you know, like Durapin. How do you say, I mean, is it Durapin?
Durapinin.
Durapinin. Wow. Okay.
I know. Well, hey, and Gaelic is no joke. Let me tell you, most of those names, there is a little bit of like ancient Britannic mixed in there, but most of it comes from Irish and Scottish Gaelic. And that's definitely one of the, there are those languages where you look at the word, the letters that are in front of you, but the sounds that they make are just absolutely not even a little bit like what you expect.
And what about the Neuromancers?
Necromancers.
Necromancers. Okay. Well, I got this all messed up.
So I'm actually working on, actually, we may have loaded it in already. I have to double check, but we worked on a pronunciation guide.
Awesome.
Pretty sure it's on my website, but it's funny. I actually get a ton of emails from people. I just need to know how this is pronounced, you know?
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with E.E. Holmes right after these brief messages.
Hello, world. You're listening to Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World here on the Paranormal UK Radio Network, where we're always creeping it real. I'm your host, Eleanor Wagner. Are you a lover of all things paranormal? Obsessed with ghosts and everything about them? Can't get enough of the spirit world and want to hear your next story? How about listening to stories from the people behind the scenes and how they got there? Do you like listening to stories from people living them? Are you intrigued by strange phenomena of all types? UFOs? Bigfoot? Scary underground tunnels right in your own neighborhood? Well, That's the kind of stuff you'll be listening to on Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World. And you'll get a history lesson here and there along the way. I can't get enough of this stuff, and I'm going to share it all with you. You can follow me and find out more about my Lady Ghostbuster team's adventures at my website, AuthorEleanorWagner.com, where you'll find video updates, audio footage, and photographs from every investigation. Thank you, paranormal enthusiasts, for joining in today. Liked what you heard and listened to in this episode? Check out the full podcast. I hope you'll come back again. Remember to tap into your own gifts. Everyone has them. In the meantime, make sure you're creeping it real.
Rift Magic Saga. You touched on a little bit. That's not part of the gateway. That's totally different.
Yes, that's true. It's not a paranormal series. It's more of like a historical fantasy. It follows the story of a lady's maid, and it takes place in this sort of alternate Victorian London where magic has mysteriously appeared within the population of people, and it is greeted with fear and prejudice, and there's sort of a religious takeover of the government. You know, people give into their fears about this new thing, and instead of trying to understand it and embrace it, they shun it. And so people who have magic become basically the servant class, and people who do not have magic maintain their privilege and their power. And so it's basically the story of a lady's maid in a very wealthy household who has her eyes opened for the first time. You know, she's got it pretty good. You know, she's in one of these big wealthy houses. She's been drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, since she was a little kid. So she thinks everything is as it should be. But then her eyes get open. She meets young man who's part of the, you know, basically the slums of the city, you know, the Riftborn who don't have it as good as she does because she's got this job. And he really opens her eyes to how unjust their society is. And she has to decide if she's going to keep towing the line or if she's going to, you know, join the rebellion because she has a very unique and very powerful gift that could be very useful to them if she chooses to join forces. So that's the story of that series.
Now, is that going to be just a 3-book series?
For right now, I think it's going to stay a 3-book series for a little while. I think it's going to leave room at the end for me to be able to come back to it if I get inspired with a new storyline or to follow a character through whatever the aftermath of the third book is. I like to leave it open-ended enough that I know I can come back to it. But the plans for that series really were just the 3 books. But I mean, look at, like, who am I? You can't trust me. Like, the Gateway books were supposed to be just the 3 books too. And then 10 books later, I was like, okay, now I'm done.
Book 11. Is book 11 like a look back?
It's a brand new adventure. It's going to pick up probably about 6 months to a year after the 10th book, that Gateway Book 7 ends. So it's really just like we're dropping back into the world of the Durapinin now that things have shifted so monumentally at the end of the last book without giving away too much. Because you haven't read it yet. So, and no spoilers from me. Don't you cheat.
No. We go into series. So like my sister, I think she's on book 5 of the trackers. My wife's on book 3, and I just started book 1. So we're kind of like bootlegging your books. I hate to say that, you know, but my sister bought most of your books, and then we bought a few of them. And I know my sister, she's going to buy them all because she likes to have her own books.
Oh, I'm all about people passing around their dog-eared copies of my books, for sure. Yeah, the piracy's kind of brutal, I'm not going to lie. However, I am so happy to hear people when they tell me that they have passed their copies along to family members, to friends. You know, honestly, like the word of mouth advertising that I get from reader to reader is just, I mean, it's the best. I mean, there's no better recommendation you can have to make you want to pick up a book than to have somebody that you know and trust their, you know, opinions about series to hand you their copy and say, you have to read this. I mean, there's just nothing better than that as far as I'm concerned. And libraries, I love hearing when people check my book out of the library too, because I mean, it just, it all comes down to having a readership. You know, it comes down to the fact that the whole reason you put your stories out there is that you hope they're going to find people. And of course, it's, you know, it's always nice when they find you by purchasing your book at full price in a bookstore. But if that's not how they stumble across it, if they stumble across it in a little free library or on their friend's bookshelf, or, you know, I just think that's awesome. I'm so grateful for anybody who takes the time to read something that I wrote. Like, what a gift.
Is there an end to the Gateway series, or how much further can it go? Is there an ending in sight?
Who knows at this point, Alton? You tell me, because I thought I had ended it twice already, and now here I am planning another book. So I guess as long as people keep harassing me with emails for another story, I'll probably keep writing them. I may have to take breaks.
Sometimes you read a book and you get to one, well, that wasn't really that great. But these books, man, it's like, it's awesome, because each book is great. You know, so
thank you.
As long as they keep going on like this, you can go on forever.
And that's the worry, isn't it? I'm like, oh God, like,
God, I hope you don't kill out Milo, you know.
Are you kidding me? There'd be people at my house with torches and pitchforks.
I love the professor too. I mean, he was.
Oh, I know.
It's almost like I feel like when you're writing, I can feel myself in that room smelling the smoke, or I can almost picture myself in there. And that's awesome.
I mean, that's the goal. As far as I'm concerned, books are all about escapism, you know, opening up those pages. And then it's like, you could go anywhere. You could be anywhere. You could be with anyone doing anything. Like, that's the magic of it. You know, as far as how many of these books are going to be, I will write them when I have a good story to tell. You know, for me, it felt like when I ended the Gateway series, where I ended it after book 7 of The Trackers, that felt like the arc of the story at the time. That was the story I had in me to tell at the moment. And I almost felt like I needed to walk away from it for a little bit. I've read series before where you feel like, wow, yeah, they should have stopped like 3 books ago. You know what I mean? It starts to get stale. It starts to get repetitive, you know, and I never want to write a book just to put words on a page. I want to make sure there's a story to tell. And I want to make sure I'm doing service to the characters and to the world that I built. And so I'm very excited with the concept they've come up with for this next Gateway book, which is why I can confidently say there will be another Gateway book, and then probably a couple more after that. But I'm only going to write the stories that I think are going to like continue to serve the characters and the readers. Like, you know, I'm not doing anybody any favors by phoning in a Gateway book that's, you know, like kind of half-assed and not really, you know, in the zone of where I feel like I need to be in order to put a story out there. So
I can guarantee you that I still were boring. Another question was, do you have any books, or you plan on writing a book that's just a standalone, that there will not be a series? Just
sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to do when you have a story that you're really into and you don't want it to end.
Yeah. Yeah. I even have a hard time limiting myself word count wise. You know, most YA novels are going to clock in at like 70, 80,000 words. Maybe my book, I think the shortest one I've written is like 93,000 words. Some of them are like over 100,000, 120,000. Like, I need to be stopped. Like, I, you know, it's hard to, as an indie writer, it can be hard sometimes when you're doing all your own promotion and all your own everything. It can be hard to just put out the single book and just leave it at that. I think now that I have this bigger back catalog of previous series that I've written, I'm probably just starting to reach a point where I might be able to put out a standalone novel, knowing that if people read it, they can go back and look at other things that I've written, and then they can, you know, they can work through the back catalog. I don't necessarily, because it's my full-time job, I don't always necessarily have the luxury of writing exactly what project I want to write at any given time. Sometimes I have to think about which projects are perhaps more marketable, which projects already have a readership. And so sometimes I get an idea for something and I think to myself, I'm going to work on that, but I'm going to put that on the back burner for now, or I'm going to write that kind of just a little bit at a time while I'm also working on this, so that it, you know, I can keep, horrible to say, but you know, you kind of got to keep churning out the types of stories that your readers come to expect from you after however many books you've written. So you have to strike a balance between catering to that and also feeding that creative fire that you have, because when it comes down to it, that's that's the heart of the story. That's where it comes from. If you're not excited about what you're writing or invested in what you're writing, you might as well just close the computer. There's no point.
Right. And do you mainly write on like a laptop, notepad, typewriter?
I am one of those people who has like an embarrassing amount of like journals and like blank books and things. I love them. I just love, it's like, it's just all possibility, you know, when you have like a blank book like that. This is probably a holdover for me with those legal pads when I was younger, which I was telling you about earlier. So I tend to use those types of things for brainstorming, for keeping lists, character names, you know, those types of things. Sometimes some of those little character building activities I was talking about earlier from my acting days. But when I am working on my manuscript, I tend to work on my laptop. I do have a pretty cool little device called a FreeWrite. It looks like a keyboard that you flip open. It's got a tiny little screen. The screen is able to be read in bright, bright sunlight. It's almost like one of those Kindle Paperwhite e-reader screens, you know? It's a little word processor. It connects to Wi-Fi, but you can't do anything else on it. You can't distract yourself with your email. You can't, you can't go on Facebook. You can't do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just for writing, like distraction-free writing. And that has been really good for me when I am traveling around, when we go on vacation, you know, if we're going to be somewhere where we're going to be outside a lot, but I know I still need to work. So that's been a good tool as well. But generally speaking, I have a writing software that I really enjoy called Noveler. It allows you to organize your manuscript in ways that I personally, for my own writing style, find to be very helpful. So I tend to use that. It has cloud backup. It saves everything.
Well, that's cool that you know, because you got control over your works, and your husband helps you with the marketing and your team on working together, making this a business and having fun doing it.
Yes.
Next question. The symbol that's on all the books.
Yes.
Is that a Triskelion?
Yes, that's right.
I recognize that symbol. I love it, you know, because...
So the Triskelion, of course, you know, has been around for thousands of years. I mean, it's like the earliest findings of it carved on stone. I mean, it's a very, very old pagan Celtic symbol that no one's really sure what the real source of it is. It seems to have been adapted over time and sort of adopted to sort of mean different things to different people. When I saw it, it really just felt to me like it was the symbol of the cycle of life and of death. Yeah.
That's what I always thought it was, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. To me, it was one of those symbols that, given its origins and sort of the vague like meanings that it seems to have now, like it's almost very adaptable across, you know, different belief systems. And it was one of those things I thought to myself that I could use as almost, you know, it's like, well, this symbol, nobody knows where it originates. Well, for this, in this fictional world, let's pretend that this is where it originated, because the Durapinin being around for as long as they have been around, it would, and their history being a secret as it is, it would make sense that symbol cropping up wouldn't have clear origins. So I swiped it, gave it a little alternate history, which I think is part of the fun.
Well, I think it fits perfectly on these books. So what is your plans for 2022?
Assuming COVID does not derail them all, I am hoping to put out this last Rift Magic book, The Girl at the Heart of the Storm, in the spring. I am hoping to release the next Gateway book also in 2022. And I am hoping, possibly, that I am going to be able to create a link between this newest Gateway book and a new series that I plan on starting to work on, which is going to involve a family coven of witches on the coast of Maine.
Awesome.
And so I'm hoping there's going to be a little, this isn't too much of a spoiler, but there's going to be a connection to traditional witchcraft in this book that we haven't had before. You know, people in the books, I'm always talking about how, you know, durapine and magic isn't, you know, it's not witchcraft. That's not what this is. But I am planning on introducing an element of witchcraft from the outside and using a character, which I hope I will then be able to link to this new series. So it'll almost be like a little bit of an Easter egg for the people who like the Gateway books. If they start this new series, they're going to realize, oh my gosh, like this takes place in the same world. Like the world where these witches are real is also the world where the Durapinin are real. And then it offers me these kind of cool opportunities to maybe play a little bit back and forth between those two worlds, you know, have cameos from characters from one to the other. And that's exciting to me. And plus then it sort of brings this other series kind of under the umbrella of the world of the Gateway a little bit.
When you plan on having that come out, what, this year maybe?
I've never released 3 books in 1 year. The best I've ever done is 2. So my hope is that I will release The Girl at the Heart of the Storm. I will release the Gateway Trackers book, and I will get like a really good start on the manuscript for that 3rd book. But I would be surprised. Who knows? We'll see. But I would be surprised if I got that in under the wire before the end of 2022. But my goal is to be very close to there and have it be like a really early 2023 release.
Are any of your books available on the audio?
They are all available on audio. In fact, yes.
Okay.
Yep. In fact, that was one of those kind of cool crossover moments that I had. A traditional audiobook publisher, one of the biggest ones in the country, has contracted all of the Gateway Tracker books, the Gateway trilogy, and also the Rift Magic books. I mean, they contracted them. I haven't even finished writing them yet, and they're going to make audiobooks of them, which is really, really exciting. So yeah, they're all available on Audible. And in fact, they have started making actual CD versions of at least the Gateway Trackers books. I think they've put out at least the first like 4 or 5 of them on actual CDs too, for people who like to listen to them that way. But every single one of them is available on audio right now. Yeah, audiobooks are having quite the moment right now. People are really getting into audiobooks, which I think is awesome because, you know, our lives are so busy. It can be hard to sit down and read for hours. But if you can throw an audiobook on while you're cleaning your house, it's like, that's time you just got back, you know? The narrators for my series are just fabulous.
That's a big thing, right, with who you have as a narrator.
I've had to shut off audiobooks because of the narrator, because they weren't to my taste. And you know, but then I could have somebody else say, oh, I love that narrator. So you
can't please everybody, right?
Yeah, it's subjective, but we've gotten great feedback from the audiobooks. So yeah, definitely a good option.
Well, Emily, I really enjoyed my conversation with you today, and I look forward to talking to you again. Maybe someday I hope to meet you and have you autograph one of my books, you know?
Oh, that would be awesome. Well, I'm, you know, as COVID kind of is this wave of COVID is settling down, I'm really hopeful that, you know, we're going to start being able to do things like book events and things like that again. And it's really my hope to be able to travel around and start to do that sort of thing, hit up some book conventions and some stuff like that. So yeah, that would be really great. And absolutely, anytime, maybe we can, you know, set something up for when that new Gateway book is coming out and we can chat again. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, E.E. Holmes, for being on the show today. And please go to the links at the bottom of this episode. Check out all the books Emily has available. They are one of the best series of books I think I have ever read. I'm your host, Al Cooley. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley.